Hello, this is episode 19 of the Anton Podcast, where Ant is on anything and everything. This episode, Ant on CJ. I said C, not T. From Buffy to Big Bang, from Fillion to Jar Jar, from Loving Glee to Running the Apple Corps, let me introduce one of the coolest grandmas you'll ever come to know. One who reads comics and tracks you down in a large building if a song from Frozen is on the radio. 110-time podcast-nominated listener. 111 if she happens to listen to this episode right now. Our versus Big Damn Knitter, Carolyn. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I am excellent. For those listening, you may not recognize this voice because this voice has not been podcasted yet. You are not a podcast superstar until right now.
Not yet.
But you are an expert podcast listener of the AB Conversation, my other podcast with Brent Strasberg, AB Conversation on iTunes. So if you're not a listener of that, then you should listen to that because you'll see that you have donated to many, many segments for the In Your Mouth segment of ideas and gifting us with new foods to try out on the podcast. I think one of the best ones has to be the Rogue Cajun Brownies. Rogue Cajun Brownies.
Yes.
That was something that we probably could have made ourselves if we had any skill in the kitchen. But thanks to you, you made that happen for us. So in honor of having you here on the Anton Podcast, and in honor of the Super Bowl tomorrow, I wanted to release an episode about basically anything but the Super Bowl, and that's going to be this episode.
Okay.
So I mentioned a couple things there that I think we'll get to talking about. Some people might wonder what the heck the Apple Corps is. Your best description of the Apple Corps?
It's a famous restaurant that high school kids went to. There was a lot of drama involved, and people meeting their long-lost children and ex-boyfriends from high school.
A lot of stuff went down there.
A lot of stuff went down there.
And some people might be wondering even more how to go to this place, like where it's located. Unfortunately, it is shut down right now.
It is.
They don't usually say canceled for restaurants, but I guess it would technically be canceled.
Kind of.
For those of you confused, which is everybody except for maybe three or four.
That's sad.
Yeah, it's a little sad, but this is where they can make up for it.
Right.
BartonHeights.4T.com, a parody teen drama web series in which, come season two, I wanted to do a good reference to the Peach Pit from 90210, and with the help of the break room at our workplace, we created the Apple Corps restaurant. And I'm trying to think how it started. Like, did you say you wanted to be in it, or I said I had a part for you? Do you remember how that even started at all?
I think I said if you had something, I'd be available.
You just kind of
came up with it, and
you just kind of had your availability
the
there.
And your name was already there from the other show, I think.
Yeah, and
it just happened to be my initials.
I think that must be how it happened.
Because
you were a part of Barton Heights prior to showing up on the screen, for you have knitted the scarf that
Sebastian wore.
Yep, the Sebastian Falworth scarf that was basically a parody of the Chuck Bass from Gossip Girl scarf. I gave you a picture of that,
right. And
you like beautifully made a copy of it that we used on the show, and is now in the Smithsonian of...
the Ansonian.
The Ansonian. There we go. So you participated in that. You've done the knitting for that prop. You also did the...
Did the socks.
Ah, yes.
The socks. The box of socks.
That's right. Did we have a... Was there a name for it? I'm trying to... Wow, I can't even remember, like, a company. I think they came up with the company name. But that ended up being in season three. Yeah, you supplied some socks. You put on the BH lettering onto our letterman's jacket.
Right.
You had a big contribution to the behind-the-scenes of Barton Heights, which then led to...
On screen.
On the scenes, yeah. And then as well as being a loyal viewer, which yes. led to you being a loyal listener to the podcast. And that is one of the reasons why you are here today.
And in my car.
What's that?
And my car.
Yeah,
That's
yeah.
one of the reasons I'm here.
That is one of the biggest reasons. Couple things that I mentioned. I think I nailed it on all the things that we, well, part some of the things that we have similar. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, something that I got you into.
Right.
But that wasn't your first Joss Whedon TV show.
No, I was a fan of Serenity when it was first on TV. I watched every episode that was on. I had been a fan of Nathan Fillion since he was on One Life to Live.
Yeah, that was actually...
Little Joey Buchanan, and then Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place.
Now, what year would have the Joey Buchanan would have been?
He was young, like teenager years. So that's a ways back.
And then you had mentioned Two Guys and a Girl, and that was something I never watched until, like, after knowing who he was.
Okay.
So you had the soap opera, you had Two Guys and a Girl in a Pizza Place, mm-hmm. and you had Firefly, because I think you probably watched more Firefly than I did. I remember, like, knowing of it and everything, being a right. big Buffy fan from the start, but just the way, obviously, the way it was scheduled, and you had the prior knowledge of who he was, and I didn't know who anybody was except for Summer Glau, knowing her from one episode of Angel, but other than that, the entire cast... was pretty pretty new to me. So knowing that we bonded on that, I'm trying to think like where that even started.
I think I heard you talking about it to a vendor or someone else one day at work, and I'm like, you know about that? You were like, you know about that?
Yeah, I think that's kind of how
it was like worlds colliding.
I think that's how it all started with us, like when, you know, leading to the collaborations for Barton Heights and all that kind of stuff. And
yeah.
Obviously, we've known each other for quite some time, but I think it was Firefly that pretty much brought the friendship in more detail. Like you said, just being like, what, you know? And I think that happens a lot of times, too, when you know somebody for a long time, and then all of a sudden you just so happen to find out you have a same interest with them that you've never known about, and that just blows the doors wide open.
Right.
Yeah, so then, after we're talking about that, then I'm sure I started pitching Buffy to you. I'm like,
right, and then you lent me the seasons of Buffy and Angel to watch, and...
Those, I don't think, took you too long to get through.
No, it didn't, and then I scored a smoking deal on Amazon and got my own set of Buffy.
That's right.
Like the whole series for, like, $40
or
$50, something like
that. The big red box one?
Yep, and then I got all the seasons of Angel, and...
Yeah, so it didn't take long for you to... I think that's what happens a lot with Buffy and Angel. Once people start that, then, once they start one, it doesn't take that much for them to get through the entire thing. And
right.
I don't think I've ever sired another fan that took, like, more than 6 months to catch up to everything. And then, obviously, that led to Dollhouse and Serenity and Dr. Horrible and all that stuff. And from there on out, I've obviously didn't have to sell you on anything.
Right.
But yeah, with that pre-existing Nathan Fillion love, a picture that I usually rub in your face every now and then. I do it to pretty much everybody, but when I met Nathan back in 06, so that was good. And then obviously with liking all that kind of stuff and Big Bang starting up. And did you watch Big Bang from the beginning?
No, I don't think so. I think...
Was that one I maybe pitched, or you just, everyone just started watching it?
You got me the first one, and then I started, you gave me the first two seasons to watch, and then I started watching it.
Yeah, I think everyone kind of, I remember watching from the beginning because of Leonard being from Roseanne originally, and so I knew who he was, and then, once it just started getting bigger and bigger and went to syndication, though, everyone, basically if you find someone that doesn't like it,
there's something wrong with that.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty ridiculous.
There's no sense of humor.
So pretty much after every new Big Bang episode, we're always talking about that. So we have that. So Buffy, Big Bang, Firefly, all that mess. And I mentioned Jar Jar just because I thought it'd be a good transition from Fillion to Jar Jar. You are a Star Wars fan.
Yes.
And a fan of all six of them, I'm assuming. Because not many people, there's Jar Jar right behind Heath Ledger Joker over there. And you like Jar Jar. You find the humor in it. Exactly. You understand why.
I don't get what all the controversy was. These people need a hobby.
Yeah. I always compare Jar Jar Binks to C-3PO. Because when you go back, and me saying that, and you go back and watch them, and you just listen to everything that C-3PO says, and just all the ridiculous quotes that he has, and, you know, he's just that bumbling, you know,
but
idiot.
But he's an integral part of the show.
Yeah, yeah. And so when people, you know, start, you know, getting upset about Jar Jar and making fun of him and letting that ruin all the movie,
they're
all the new
overthinking
ones.
It.
Exactly, yeah. They don't understand
it's
that.
It's just for entertainment. It's yeah. not...
They don't,
not it, literature.
Yeah, they don't understand that every kid that sees that movie laughs at what happens in Jar Jar, and I laughed at it too.
Right.
And so that's what I like to bring up, because you are one of the rare ones that I know that do like all of the Star Wars movies. And there's one like friend from San Diego, a Twitter friend, that she loves everything too. So whenever I ask someone like, "Oh, you're a Star Wars fan?" And then I'm like, "Oh, do you like the origin or the prequels?" And they're like, "Oh no, those are awful." And I'm like, "Oh, then you're not a Star Wars fan."
Right, exactly.
I'm like, yeah. So I needed to bring that out there, because us Jar Jar fans need to stick together.
We
so.
Do.
And then unfortunately, George Lucas, you know, hearing that just started to dwindle down Jar Jar's role throughout the movies, where
right.
he had like, you know, maybe 10 lines in the second one. He had no lines, and he was on camera for like 3 seconds in the third one.
Yeah.
And yeah, he, I don't know, he shouldn't have wussed out like that. He should have just stuck with it and, kept true to his word. And that eventually what led him to retirement is the fact that he kept making all of these movies that we supposedly liked and everyone complained about it. And then he just basically said, he's like, "Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah.
Done making movies." And it's unfortunate that, you know, and I think that all does, you know, Jar Jar is a part of that too, but like the prequels, and I think one thing that the people probably have problems with the prequels is the fact that if you watch them all in an episodic order, that as you get halfway through, then they look crappier, just because obviously you jump into the 70s thing, but
right,
like,
right.
I don't know why people can't, you know, suspend their belief.
I actually did just watch them all. I forget, one of the channels was running a Star Wars marathon.
Yeah.
So I did get to watch just about all of them.
Yeah, and I love every single one, and I can understand where, obviously, when you get the Blu-rays and they add in the extra scenes, which people were pissed off that he changed the original movies and things like that. And it's just like, well, if you want the original movies, just watch your VHS copies of
right.
it. If you like Star Wars and you're just going, you know, "I'm going to buy Star Wars every single time it comes out," and so far I have, from the original VHSs to the original DVDs to the Blu-rays, and then if they come out with 3D ones, even though I don't have a 3D TV, I'm still going to buy those. Yeah. The next format that it comes out in, and then especially now with the three new Star Wars, 7, 8, 9 coming out, and in the coming years, then I'm sure that'll be another grand box set that I'll, you know, end up repurchasing. So, yeah, it's good to know that you're a true Star Wars fan.
Well, and it's the fact that you brought up that Jar Jar reminds you of C-3PO. Just imagine what 4, 5, and 6 would have been like without him.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's just, it's weird. Not a big part, but an important part.
That's just it. He's the comedy relief. Whether you laugh at it or not, technically he is the comedy
right.
relief.
Right.
Of there, and everyone has their little comedy moments and stuff, but I would say easily C-3PO probably takes the cake for the entire trilogy of the first trilogy, and then
mm-hmm.
Jar Jar, like after Jar Jar was left out, I'm trying to think what's even funny about, other than everyone's like tiny little quips or something like that, but there isn't a main character in there.
Not
that's,
laugh out loud funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which also worked, too, because the movie's supposed to get darker as you
right.
start to see the Darth Vader transformation. But, yeah, without C-3PO, without Jar Jar Binks, Star Wars, it would suck. So.
Yeah.
Now, did you see any of the originals in the theaters at
no.
all?
No. It wasn't until later that I started getting into them.
Now, was there any other, like, sci-fi things that you were into, or it was just so happened to...
I think Firefly was the first...
First thing that you're really dedicated into.
When I was a kid, I used to watch Star Trek.
Okay.
Yeah, I had a kind of a thing for William Shatner back then. Not so much now.
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't we all? And nobody so does now.
I remember watching that when I was younger.
Okay.
Watched that a lot.
See, and that's always, I'm glad you brought that up because I didn't even think of that, but that's always like the big thing of like, a lot of people are like, oh, you're either a Star Trek fan or you're a Star Wars fan. And I was always a Star Wars fan. And every time I watched Star Trek, I think comparing to Star Wars, I just thought it was boring. I'm watching it, you know, in the 90s or something, late 80s or something.
But you have to look at it the time that it was done.
Yeah, yeah.
It was big for then.
And it wasn't until J.J. Abrams came out with Star Trek in 2008, I think it was, 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And being a J.J. fan and being like, all right, I'll definitely check this out. Trailer looked awesome. Blew me away, and I immediately bought the first season on Blu-ray of the 1966 show. And I can definitely appreciate it a lot more now, you know, understanding, like you said, the time period. And so, yeah. Other than that, I think Star Wars was my main science fiction influence introduction, which obviously made me like Firefly and... let's see, what else do we got on the list here? Did you end up seeing the re-releases at all, though, when they came out, the original trilogy in, like, 97, they came back to theaters at all?
No. Okay. No, I didn't.
I remember when those came out, that was my time to make up for the fact that I was born the year that Episode 6 came out, so obviously I didn't have an opportunity to see them in theaters.
Right.
And then late 90s when the... special editions, that's when he started adding in like little bits and pieces that everyone started hating, but so I finally got to redeem myself and see those movies in the theater. Now, did you see any of the prequels in the theater?
Yes.
Okay, all of them, I'm assuming, or just...
I think the third one for sure,
okay.
Maybe the second.
See, I remember for me, this is kind of interesting that I was just talking about people not being Star Wars fans because they didn't like the prequels. When the first Episode 1 came out, I don't know where my interest was because it wasn't in that movie where, I don't know if I just saw the trailer and I just thought, I'm like, okay, they're rebooting Star Wars or something. It's just something I didn't hate on. It's just like, whatever, I don't need to see it. And then my mom, when it came on a VHS, came home from school and all of a sudden there was a VHS copy of Episode 1 sitting there. She's like, oh, you like Star Wars, right? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm just like, I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, but I'm like, I don't really know what these new ones are about, you know? Mm-hmm. And
so you had never read the books or anything?
No, not like going back. You know, other than the movies, I didn't do any comic books or any other novel spinoffs or anything like that. But she had gotten it, so I'm like, all right, I'll give it a shot. I put it in, and then all of a sudden I see Natalie Portman for the first time.
Okay.
And that's when it hit me, where all of a sudden my interest in this movie, and then watching it and being like, why didn't I see this in the theater? Like, what? And it's not, you know, I didn't go on I wasn't picketing the movie or anything like that. I just simply wasn't going to see it. And then once that happened, then I made up for it for seeing Attack of the Clones 11 times in theater. Natalie Portman, that's where, you know.
Trying to think now, I think maybe I did see them all in the theater. I had seen parts of the original trilogy, but then I saw the three prequels. Mm-hmm. I saw those, and then I went and really started going back and rewatching the original ones.
And I think I always grew up with them because... my brothers had all the toys and everything like that.
Right,
so
right.
I was in that right time frame of being educated with Star Wars at an early age. And then as you can see for Natalie Portman, I got Natalie Portman shelf straight ahead there with a framed picture and then her Amidala bobblehead and then almost all of her movies. There's a couple of foreign movies that are really expensive and hard to get that I don't have. But that's what kind of gave me the interest, and then I, when I rewatched, I just kept watching Episode 1 over and over again, and and then hearing how people hated it and thinking, like, how do they hate him? Like, the pod race. Everyone always says the pod race is awesome, which it is. And
right.
Darth Maul is freaking awesome.
Yes, yes.
Awesome villain. But those are, like, the two things that people that hate the prequels or hate episode one, they'll usually go back and say, well, those are the two best parts. But I don't know if they just hate the origin pacing of, like, that's what I like so much is just seeing how it all started and
right.
just...
Right.
I was blown away by it. Going down the list, some other cool things. Glee. Now I'm trying to remember, too, because I have a bad memory. Did you watch Glee from the beginning?
Yes, I did.
Okay. As did I remember, because it premiered after American Idol. It was like a season finale of American Idol, where it had the first episode...
It was in spring.
Yeah.
And then it's coming in fall.
Yeah, and then it came back with the second episode, which also serves as a first episode. If you watch it, it kind of reintroduces it in a way that, in case you had missed that one in May, they didn't re-air that one, but... But yeah, and that's, I remember just seeing, even though I didn't watch American Idol, I think it just on Fox, I just kept seeing the Don't Stop Believing promos, and then I'm
right.
just like, well, that sounds cool. And
yeah,
and yeah, so the Glee love, you know, going, do you own any of those on DVD? You own the music and stuff like that.
I though. Own all the seasons on DVD.
So yeah, so that's another one too, that there's not many people... And I'll use the term grandma again. grandmas that I'll relate to that obviously have the collections that you do that I relate to and
right.
blah, blah, blah. So that's always a good thing to go back and forth on. And the fact that you still watch Glee, I think, is another thing,
yeah,
too. That,
yeah,
because they're
waiting for it to come back.
Yeah, and at the time of this recording, we're a little over 3 weeks away or so.
Something like that, yeah.
But yeah, a lot of people too. That's another thing that after the original cast graduated, and then they brought in some new people, those original quote unquote fans started, you know, just dropping off the show. And
well, that and they kept moving it too. They kept moving
yeah.
the night it was on.
Yeah, Tuesdays over to Wednesdays, and then jumping into Thursdays.
Right,
and,
right.
And as we say that, when it comes back in 3 weeks, it's moving back to Tuesdays. So.
Okay. That's right. It's going to be on against
yeah,
Shield.
Yeah. So, yeah, but out of all, like, the people, like, I think you and Erica, at least for the... well, Aunt Sue still watches it. But a lot of the other people just, like, seem to, like, not put it as a priority like we do. And they don't
right.
still find it entertaining, you know. Let's see. Well, I guess with musicals, I grew up watching the musicals when it came to, like, Wizard of Oz and all that kind of stuff, but... Just because they were there, but I never really actually liked them or loved them, like, compared to, like, Star Wars or anything like that. But what's your opinion on musicals?
Every time The Wizard of Oz is on TV, I will watch it, even though I own the DVD. I still watch it when it's on, because I love the black and white version.
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
And growing up, like, is that something that, like...
Every time it was on, I would watch it.
And then, is there other musicals, too? Like, the West Side Story?
Yes. I remember watching that when I was in grade school. We studied the music in the... As one of our classes, we studied music and the whole story behind it.
Okay.
So that one, yeah, that was from a young age. I've been into West Side Story.
So it didn't take much for you to, obviously, you know, like Glee because of all the stuff. And
right.
For me, it was something brand new that it
Grease.
Wasn't...
Grease is another
yeah.
one. That was...
Grease is the word, they'd
Grease
say.
Grease is the word. Have you heard?
And thanks to Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, that is what... Well, I guess for first, Buffy the Musical, that came first. Buffy the Musical, and then there was like a Scrubs musical, and then Dr. Horrible came along. And so all these things that I previously loved were having musical adaptations, and that's when I... You know, I've obviously liked things like all the Disney movies, and you're
right.
a huge Disney collector from
right.
having the movies and everything. But when Glee started, that kind of just, like, took me for surprise at how much I liked it, and then that opened up, and then I finally saw Grease for the first time, and I absolutely love it. And
the first one, Grease 2, is not so good.
That one I haven't seen, but I like... Okay, now, here's a good question now, because that's usually the thing of Grease 1, great, Grease 2, not great... But I like Michelle Pfeiffer a lot.
Right.
Is that enough, do you think, that Yeah, I'm surprised I haven't watched it yet, but I think it's only like $5 on Amazon or something.
Probably.
But for someone that likes Michelle Pfeiffer a lot,
You probably would like it.
I'm sure I'll appreciate it at least for that much, but now are you saying it's not as good just because, like, without John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John aside, but, like, song-wise, just not...
The actors in it didn't seem to click as well as in the original one, and it just...
Does it have anything to do with the original, or is it just a whole new cast of...
It's a new cast, like the next class in school, and it just seemed like they were trying to come off right on
the success. Yep. Okay. Yeah, so you've had a lot of musical love prior to Glee. Glee opened up my musical love, and, you had mentioned with West Side Story when that Blu-ray came out, like... I'm just going through and, like, Mamma Mia, a movie I just bought. Have you seen Mamma Mia?
No, not yet.
When Glee did that song, I immediately just bought the movie, which is funny because when that movie was in theaters, I forget what movie was out at the same time, but I kept seeing that trailer and I was so pissed off. And this is pre-Glee. I was so pissed off at that trailer, just being like, oh, this is so stupid. I'm like, why do I have to keep seeing this dumb trailer over and over again? And then little did I know that I own it, and I absolutely love it.
I'll borrow that one sometime. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. But that and, like, Hairspray, the new one. I haven't seen the original Hairspray. But the newer one, I got that. So I'm pretty much just making up for lost time of, like, all of these things, realizing that, you know.
And because of Glee, I went and bought the original Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, yes. You hadn't seen it prior.
I had not seen it. I had seen little bitty bits and thought it was weird.
Yeah.
Really weird. And then watching it on Glee and listening to the music, I'm like, okay, I have to see what this is all about.
Yeah, and I had a Rocky Horror Picture Show love from the Newman family, John Newman. They always liked it, so I always saw it, like, over there, but watching it, I always thought it was weird, too, but... As, like, they were so into it, and then I just started to, you know, certain parts here and there that I really liked, and the, you know, Time Warp song, obviously, is extremely catchy, and then, so I had eventually owned it, and then when I found out Glee was doing it, it is still by far my favorite episode of Glee. I guess we should do that, too, while we're talking about that. Do you have a favorite episode of Glee?
Mine would probably be the Beatles episodes.
Okay, cool. And very recent, too, these past two season 5 openers. Obviously, with you and...
And earlier in the seasons, they did Lennon and McCartney.
Okay.
They did some of their songs, too, earlier.
Yeah, I know, like, Imagine.
Yes,
in
love that song.
First season, and you come from a Beatles generation of anything to... talk about that, because I am very uneducated growing up in it.
I think it's next weekend.
Yeah, that's right.
They're doing the Beatles special, 50 years from when they first came on the Ed Sullivan Show. I watched that show.
What year was that?
1964,
okay.
I was little. I was 3 years old. I remember watching it.
That's still pretty cool to say, like...
But I had older sisters, and one was a huge Beatles fan, and one was a huge Elvis fan. So I've got... that ingrained into me, but I've always been a Beatles fan.
Yeah, I always think that's amazing, even though I like, you know, I like about, you know, about the Beatles rock band, just because, you know, the songs are catchy and everything, but I wouldn't classify myself as, like, I'm not a huge Beatles nut or anything like that, but that fascinates me so much of, you know, with you just, like, being 3 years old when that happened, you know, that's just such a cool moment. Like, if I had the chance to go back in time, I think that would be a cool thing to experience,
that's,
you know,
awesome.
Just... the Beatlemania, and have you ever seen, the American Bandstand TV show, American Dreams. I'm trying to think who the freaking cast is, but Sugar from Glee, I know we had talked about this.
I saw a promo for that.
Okay, Sugar from Glee, Vanessa Lange's is one of the cast members. Brittany Snow, who Pitch Perfect. That was a show. I'm Googling it for all those people that are waiting for me to... From 2002 to 2005.
I did watch that.
Set to the soundtrack of the 60s, a Philadelphia family moves towards the cultural upheaval of in the years ahead. The Pryor's teen daughter, Meg, tries to shed her good girl image by hanging... By hanging with her worldly friend, Roxanne, who was Sugar from Glee, and pursuing a dream of being an American Bandstand dancer.
Yeah, I did watch that when I was on.
Yeah, and...
I also did watch American Bandstand when I was on.
And that's where, like, when I watch American Dreams because of Sugar, like, that show, I think, is done very well because it is very period piece, and I think they did an amazing... Because it was, what, Dick Clark, right?
Yes.
And they take original footage of that, of the original show, and they blend it into the actor that plays it into the show. Like, it's a cool way of, like, of making both of them exist as one instead of just, like, redoing it. It's just, like, it's a pretty trippy way of the way they did it. And watching that, going back to the Beatles thing, that kind of makes me, like, feel how cool that era must have been, you know, just to...
Because there's no shows on like that now.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Like American Bandstand or, you know.
Yeah.
Michael and that, that's... It's different.
Yeah, it's still very, obviously, with the... Like, Bandstand... No, it's been a while since I even watched American Dreams, but, Now, they had guests on there. Did they have, like...
They had guests on, and they
did they have voting of any sort, or they just... It was just a way to get...
No, it was just the hit songs of the week or whatever, and then they had... the current artists there doing performances live.
Yeah.
And then just people there just dancing, having fun.
That's weird.
They did a little bit of a ratings thing. You know, they pulled three of the people out of the audience. And
now, that would probably be something like Soul Train is probably...
Right. Soul Train came after. And that was more of the soul music, which...
And all the train music of all the trains.
Yeah, of course, all the trains. Train music.
Choo-choo
awesome.
Music. like you said, that is kind of weird that, you know, with The Voice and with American Idol and
those are all wannabes, and whereas Soul Train and American Bandstand were all established.
Yeah, that's weird though that they don't at least go back to that formula of just doing that where you don't have to see people crying and seeing their dreams crushed and while seeing people's dreams get made, but. Yeah, that's kind of interesting to get like a, I don't know if it was like an hour show or something or half hour.
I think it started out as a half hour and then went to an hour.
Yeah, weekly, I'm assuming.
Yeah, Saturday mornings.
And you know how great that'd be just to have a, you know, a concert type of show. And I think like the closest maybe would be like the Lady Gaga and the Muppets thing. Like,
right.
In a way, obviously, that just focused on her, but it's still just kind of a...
Well, even just the Muppet Show.
Yeah. Oh,
they
yeah.
had great musical acts on every week.
Yeah, so I suppose other than the Muppet Show and SNL and stuff like that, there really isn't anything that just sit down and enjoy rather than, you know, calling in or tweeting this and save this person and
emailing
save that person.
It. Yeah, there's too much drama involved. The others were just pure entertainment.
Yeah. So if we backpedal there and, I'm on the internet there, that wasn't my notes. I was looking at American Dreams, summary there. Big Bang, go to that. Like, my favorite episode of the Big Bang Theory, it's probably going to have to be Stan Lee's episode, which actually, it's perfect. I didn't even think of this, and it should have been mentioned, and I'm glad I backpedaled there. Stan Lee's episode of the whole getting the restraining order signed, which was 100% your idea, which led to my like 8-month dilemma wondering what the heck am I going to
have Stan Lee signed?
Yeah, and I'm sitting there and it's literally like within like a couple weeks, and I think I brought it up to you where I'm just like, oh, I got this big Avengers book, and I'm signing this poster, I'm like so many things. And then you had just brilliantly said, you should have him sign a restraining order. And I'm like, oh my God, that is... And yeah, and before I knew it, I went ahead and as we look,
it's
framed up there. And yeah, a brilliant idea. If anyone hasn't seen it, basically Sheldon Cooper, all the guys go to the comic book store to meet Stan Lee, But Sheldon, due to a previous episode of helping Penny, has a court date for a speeding ticket, running a red light or something like right. that. And
when she fell and broke her arm.
Yep. The whole bathtub scene of that's not my arm. So that led him to having a court date that made him miss meeting Stan Lee, and Penny makes it up for him by going to Stan Lee's house, which leads to a restraining order, which leads to Carolyn's brilliant idea. And I got it on video, and Stan loved it. When you do the meet and greets, got very little time unless you have something real specific that's going to, like, I'm not going to go up to Stan Lee and just be like, thanks for creating Spider-Man. That's kind of a given.
You wouldn't be there if you weren't appreciative.
Exactly. So it's one of those where I'm just like, with saying that, where going up to him, it was interesting that he had a couple people before him and a couple people after him that was helping him along with just getting the items in front of him and getting a marker ready and names and things like that. And I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, I'm bringing them a big document that I made up 100%. Is there going to be enough time for them to be like, oh, well, he's not going to put his name on a document of that could say, oh, he's signing over all of his all of his Marvel money to me.
Oh, that'd be sweet.
Yeah. And I could see that. So having thought of that, I had brought like a Fantastic Four issue from
Plan B.
Yeah, from, I think it was from the 70s when Reed Richards and Sue Storm get married. I have the wedding issue, a first print of it. And I'm like, all right, that'll be my backup. So I got to talk to the people beforehand, and I'm like, all right, there's a restraining order. I'm like, it is, it's a reference to when he was on the Big Bang, blah, blah, blah. I'm trying to say this fast, just to whatever. And the guy was really confused, and he started reading it. And then it's just like, wait, he's like, this is your name? I'm like, yes, this is my name. I'm like, it's a fake thing. I'm like, if you don't like it, I'm like, I can have him sign this comic book. And then he's like, oh, okay. Like, I think he was just confused. And like, when he was reading it, you know, Anthony Latch, I think that's where he was thrown off, where he's just
who's
like,
this guy?
Yeah, yeah. But he just said that. He's like, wait, this is your name? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, oh, no, this would be cool. And like, if he doesn't like it, then sure, whatever. Brought it up to Stan, and the guy just kind of, and now I got to tell him. And I'm just like, oh, Stan, this is a restraining order against myself from you in reference to the big, because, you know, 91-year-old guy, just right. kind of added to it in case he had forgotten. And it was like 2 or 3 years old episode at the time. And then, he's just like, oh, that's funny. And then he signed it and like, oh, thanks a lot. And I got like, you're not supposed to have, like, cameras and all that kind of stuff. And me being sneaky, I was able to run a video cam. Then I got the audio of that. And I was able to take some awesome still shots of him just generally being happy of just, like, after signing that. When, you know, signing your name over and over again, you know, it just gets tiresome and things like that. And people saying, oh, thanks for creating Spider-Man, blah, blah, blah. But, like, seeing the smile on his face that, you know, which may not have existed if he would have signed that, you know, Fantastic Four right. issue, and I probably would have just said thank you for just creating Marvel stuff. So I'm forever in debt to you for coming up with such a brilliant idea.
I try.
Yep. And you didn't try real hard, actually. I remember exactly where it happened. You were, it was over by the bacon section.
Yeah,
or
spacing
like,
or something.
Yeah, it was, I remember exactly where we were standing when you said that, and it just hit me. I'm like, oh my God, that's perfect. And the people online too. Everyone's showing off their cool items that they're going to get signed. If people got all these,
they're probably jealous of you.
Well, that's just it. People are just like, you know, we're all looking at each other's cool merchandise of like, oh, here's a cool issue from the '60s that they got. All you know, it's perfect
some of the
condition.
Stuff they spent lots and lots of money on.
Yeah, exactly. Here's something that I took a piece of paper and typed it out and printed it, I think I borrowed it's on a yellow piece of paper to make it more of a legal document. I think I borrowed that piece of paper from my mom's cardstock or something. Okay. So it pretty much cost me next to nothing to get the item signed. That's what's crazy because I'm looking at like my Avengers book that I paid like $70 for and just like all of these things, very expensive things. And then I just give him a scrap.
Anybody can give him a comic book to sign.
Exactly. And when everyone was showing off their items, I was kind of the last one because I knew that I had the better item. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to have them sign this restraining. And they were like, oh, my God. Everyone just loved it. And there was one guy before I had mentioned that. Because, like, when you go and, like, you're in, like, herded, like, cattle, so you keep seeing, like, some of the same people. And you're seeing lines from this way. And then I had heard somebody say, like, oh, that'd be funny to have them sign a restraining order for Big Bang Theory. And I'm like, oh, sir. And then I just pulled it out. And then they were just like, oh, my God. And every time I just kept saying, I'm like, my friend Carolyn from work, she pitched that idea to me. So, something that I just rattled my brain over for like 8 months trying to think. I didn't mean to say it like sadly when I said 8 months.
Yeah, I think you did.
Yeah, okay, maybe. So that's what my favorite Big Bang. Do you have a favorite like moment or episode altogether?
The episode that sticks out in my mind is the one where Penny and Sheldon are giving each other Christmas presents, and he's trying to decide what kind of basket to get her, and he ends up getting all of these, and she gives him this crumpled up napkin, and then he sees what it was, and I have Leonard Nimoy's DNA, I can create a new one.
And it comes rushing out with all of the baskets then.
And he hugs her.
Yeah, that was... And that was a good moment, too. Like, if you watch it and watch a lot of the how close, especially Kaylee and Jim Parsons are, like, they're probably the closest out of everybody. Like, at an award show when he won the Emmy, she was presenting it. And you can watch the video on YouTube, and it just gives me goosebumps just thinking of it. But when she opened it up and saw that she got to say her best friend's name, you know, Jim Parsons, for winning an Emmy, and, like, seeing them on stage, like... Like, you could just see how strong their friendship is, and then watching that episode when he, because that's when he hugs her, hugs her for the first time, and he kind of slowly goes in, and then doesn't she say, like, look, Leonard Sheldon's hugging me, and, like, looking at her reaction, like, you can just see how, like, real that reaction was, and just, that is a moment that is...
That one and the one where they hold up the sign that says sarcasm, we actually have one of those at work.
No, which was that?
It was one of the earlier, maybe season one, where Sheldon can't tell if it's real or sarcasm, so they just on a white piece of paper, black marker, they write sarcasm.
Okay, that's slowly, I can see
and
that.
You'll have to watch them again just to see that.
Yeah, darn those DVD replays.
Terrible.
Okay, then to carry on with the favorite episodes, we mentioned Firefly. Is there something that sticks out, a favorite episode that you have?
Trash.
Trash is pretty good. it's kind of funny, like, even though I asked the question, you think I would have one. I would probably say Objects in Space.
Out of Gas is really good, too.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, they're all amazing.
Yeah. But I think Trash and Out of Gas are my favorite.
Yeah. And, well, the Trash one, we get a little extra Nathan Fillion. Yeah, so
that's... His tattoo.
That's
his tattoo.
That's a given. And I didn't mean to say butt like that. maybe I did.
Spoiler.
Spoiler alert. But with Objects in Space... being a very, and to keep spoiler free for a lot of things too, but very river centric, and she really shows a lot of cool scenes in there of just kind of jumping in. Normally she's always just left on the ship and left to drive Shepherd Book crazy or something, or just having a... It's weird going back, like, prior to meeting Summer, like rewatching Firefly. And it's crazy that she's on her screen right now, because Serenity's in background as we talk about this. Going back and just kind of realizing, be like, she really doesn't have many scenes in Firefly, throughout episodes. And going back, even Wash, too, like, he really doesn't have many scenes. But then when watching Serenity... And it's obviously very river-centric. And then Serenity was basically what season two of the show was going to be if they had gotten a season two. 22 hours crammed down into 2 hours, basically. But yeah, it's kind of interesting. So I think Objects in Space probably is my favorite, because it's probably one of the bigger river, being a badass type of episodes. But other than that, than the shindig, where, not shindig. I can't think of the episode name where basically they're down on a planet and there's some like folky type music playing, and then she's witnessing this and she jumps in and she starts dancing around with everyone.
Right.
I think I would know the title, but my brain's full of a bunch of nerdy things and it's hard to keep all that straight there. Buffy. Any favorite Buffy episodes? Mine, for one, 100% is the musical. That seems to be a given for like a lot of people when you ask people, but beyond the musical, I'll say my number two episode, or number one if you say musical doesn't count, is Restless, which is a season four finale, and which is one of the most bizarre episodes, where it's a complete dream episode. And watching it, basically the season four wraps up in the episode prior to it, and they had one more episode for the finale, and it was just such a trippy episode, and that's where, like, the cheese man came in, like, with all these, like, you know, the guy with his cheese singles and stuff like that, and Giles and Spike wearing, like, Giles-type suits, swinging on the swing set, and just, like, all this random trippy stuff, like, that's my runner-up for my favorite. So
I haven't watched it now for a couple of years. Yeah. It's, I have to go through it again, but...
Also acceptable. Option C would be all 144 episodes.
They're all good.
Let's see. And what was the other Buffy Firefly? Okay. Yeah, I think that covers all that. Back to where we left off there with. How about this here? We mentioned the Apple Corps, Barton Heights. Do you have a favorite episode of Barton Heights? There's a lot of crazy moments.
A lot of them.
And if you say a certain moment, that could, I'll accept that as relating to a certain episode. I don't need you to say, oh, season 2, episode 12.
Good, because I don't remember.
Good, because, I can't remember sometimes either, so. But I guess favorite moments, the one thing when making the parody teen drama web series, my original idea was to have the show go super fast and... to keep the episode short, they were supposed to be like 2 to 3 minutes each, and I made the first episode and end up being like six minutes or something. And I'm like,
right.
Like, oh, how did I make so much? And then I just realized that I decided to mold all the episodes to be kind of that length. But as we went on, I ended up making like 22-minute episodes. I'm making real television-length shows.
Mm-hmm.
And then, the finale itself is an hour finale, broken up in two parts. But season one, my favorite episode out of everything, is my original vision, was the fact that the Sadie character was going to get pregnant, find out she's pregnant at the beginning of the episode, and technically 3 to 4 minutes later, she would go into labor. That was my original concept of the show, and that stayed true, and that's all in season one, episode four. And when people watch it, like when I pitch it to people that maybe like don't know who anybody is, obviously you had the benefit of knowing everybody,
right,
working with everybody and being in the environment, and then eventually being in the episodes,
right.
You definitely know yourself.
I think so.
Yeah, you think. I usually tell people, because it's pretty rough compared to like how much better the production value of the show got, but I always tell people, I'm like, watch through episode four, because that's my original vision. I'm like, if you don't understand the comedy of a 4-minute pregnancy, then I'm like, you're not going to understand the show at all. And that's usually what I pitch. So that episode still sticks as my all-time favorite. So any moments that come to mind?
Trying to think. There's always a couple good ones. The whole, the 7-Up truck running down the girl was funny. Again,
yes.
Knowing the people. It's not funny when it happens.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
it was the jail scene and everything that came after.
Yeah, when you throw in a big, giant 7-Up vendor with the nickname Cheeseburger... when that happens and you see Cheeseburger show up, that was a pretty good thing. And And, yeah, that was one of those that I had thrown him in the Custodian movie, and then I threw him in a super short part, and then I was able to bring him back for the season two premiere just because, you know, the people demanded more cheeseburger, more cheese on their burger.
The funny thing, after that aired, too, at work in the back room, he's moving his cart, and I'm like, get out of the way, he kills teenage girls with his truck.
Yeah.
And he looked at me, and then he realized, oh, she must have seen it, and then started laughing.
Yeah, taken out of context, anyone else in that surrounding area would have been very...
He was just in jail for killing a 16-year-old girl.
Yeah, it definitely didn't give him a good reputation as far as the show goes there, but, yeah, he, for as little as I needed him for the show, he definitely delivered into, you know, once again, too, just knowing who he was. Good comedy relief there. Let's see here. The podcast. I had mentioned your 110-time podcast-nominated listener. We, at the time of this, I think we're doing episode 93 this week, or 92?
I think so.
We're doing 92. And this is 18 episodes of the Anton podcast. And then there was a couple, like the Twilight episode that wasn't numbered, and a couple other random things, blah, blah, blah. So basically saying that you are a dedicated listener that we are very thankful for week in and week out. And several times when you come in, you know, we see each other at like 6 a.m. in the morning, and you're just like, I was just listening to you. it's both a compliment and flattered, and then it's also creepy at the same time. And it was even more creepy is that when you, I think you just gave me a ride home one time, or we were going somewhere.
At the movies. When we met it down at the movies to go see.
Okay.
What were we seeing?
Okay.
Oh, were we going to see Thor? And I pulled in and I was listening to the podcast, and you were just talking about going to see the movie with me.
Yeah, you were.
Like, I'm here. It's weird.
Yeah, we had driven separately. You were listening to me, like, a couple days prior, talking about us
going to the movie
that day that as it was happening. And then the other freaky thing, too. I think you were taking me home, like, one time, and you turned on the car, and my voice was just sitting.
Yeah,
like,
that was after the dance.
Oh, okay. We went to the dancing that was. Night. And that was the first time I listen. Once in a while, I listen to. I don't listen to every episode I record, but I've especially not listened to it through stereo speakers of a car or anything. So it was just weird sitting there listening to myself and very, very. What's the term I'm looking for? It's very narcissistic of me in a way, but
in a good way.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so have you listened to any podcast prior to us saying we have a podcast?
Yes, I listened to a couple knitting podcasts. Some of them started out as podcasts. A couple of them have evolved into video casts now.
Okay.
But yeah.
And I'm glad you mentioned that. It's a perfect segue to what I had mentioned about being our versus resident big damn knitter. Because you are a big damn knitter.
Yes.
Is that something that you've always done, or is that of a recent...
I learned how when I was probably 8 or 9 years old.
Oh, really?
Didn't do it for a long time, and then started up again, and lately, a lot.
Now, how'd you learn? Was it just something like a relative or a grandma, or just...
A friend of mine at school couldn't go out for recess, so I stayed in with her, and she had just learned how in 4-H, so she showed me with 2 pencils and some string.
That's actually a very heartwarming story. I think I can hear our ratings going up right
awesome.
Now with people people loving it. Yeah, and then when did you pick up the knitting again? I forget if you just said that.
It was on and off over the years, but big time in the last 6 years.
And then because you have this online group and this whole board that you go to.
Right,
the Ravelry.
Ravelry.
And that led to, you have meetups weekly?
Yes.
And these are people that were from the board?
We met through that. find people in your general area, and we send out a group message saying, hey, we want to try and set up a local group, just a this weekly sit and knit.
And that's your Panera?
Right.
Panera meet and
Tuesday
greet?
Tuesday nights at Panera.
So yeah. When you met these people, that was first time, you didn't know anyone prior?
I didn't know
prior.
Any of them, nope. And I just got an invite on Ravelry and said, hey, come here this time, we'll be doing this. And
as you're in the knitting world, you realize that you don't just talk about knitting.
Oh, no.
You somehow realize that other interests that people share, I would think that if I go to KnitACon 2014, I would think I'm going to talk nothing but knitting with everybody. It's all just going to be about yarn and nothing more. And little do you know that you can also take all of that geek cultured stuff that we just talked about for almost the past hour and relate that to knitting. What the heck am I talking about? Explain it to our listeners what I mean.
Just geek worlds colliding. Jane Hat.
Yes, the Jane hat is perfect
Jane's
example.
Hat, his mom made him. It's knit. There's copies out of it all over.
And now in your group, though, it end up being people, Whedon fans, realizing
right.
Nathan fans.
Right.
Some came from Castle Alone.
Right.
Some came from Firefly. And you start blending, and then you guys are all sharing.
Yep.
So that's like, and that leads to like.
Right now, my copy of Much Ado About Nothing is on its third person that's borrowed it.
Awesome.
wait, I was next.
Because every time you told me about that of, like, you know, the Castle fans or something, and
mm-hmm.
and then
Castle fans are Big Bang fans.
And then not knowing about Firefly, and then you coming in and educating them and just saying, oh, you got to watch this then. And,
yep.
you know, it's just awesome that all that stuff can coexist. And then even the names of the yarn have specific.
They do. There's some dyers will come up with themed colorways. There was one that did a bunch of colorways based on Buffy. There's some done on Firefly. There's one that I just got. It's based on the movie Frozen.
Yes, Frozen.
The colorway is named Elsa. But, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, that's awesome, too. And actually, with the knitting, obviously, with the Sebastian scarf that we had mentioned at the top of the show.
Right.
This is where Brent goes. Top of the show. And you had also made me the Firefly gloves.
Right, the yarn colorway that was named Firefly.
Which, as soon as it gets cold here in Wisconsin,
November.
Yeah. which I wear all the time, every single day, and they're still holding up very well.
Good.
And that was, man, how many years would that have been?
It's
like
quite a few, 3-4 years already.
Yeah, so I support those, and I support some of the other scarves because I needed more scarves for the Fallworth family.
Right.
So you gave me some, like, castaways or
yep,
some
extras that I had.
And, so that helped supply that, and so basically I'm wearing the Carolyn creations on my hands and around my neck and across my face. And let me think. Is there anything else that...
I have one colorway at home and I haven't done anything with it. It's Captain Tight Pants.
Nice. so that's pretty awesome that stuff can all exist.
But, there's groups you can join. And it's people all over the world. It's not just in this area or in this country. I mean, I've got friends that are in Australia and everywhere. But based on if you like a TV show or if you have a certain breed of dog or if you, you know, cook a certain way, or it's crazy.
And what's the website if you want to do a promotion for them?
Ravelry.com.
Ravelry.com.
You have to join, and it's over 3 million users on it, close to 4 million.
So if you're a knitter...
crocheter, any kind of crafter like that.
If you're sitting there alone in the dark listening to my podcast for some reason, and you realize you don't share your knitting obsessions with anyone, there's a perfect place to do so.
There's lots of groups devoted to Doctor Who also. That's one thing I'm not really into, but that's a big thing also.
And mentioning Doctor Who is something that actually after this podcast, I'm going to start my first ever Doctor Who episode.
Mm-hmm.
Not the first episode of Doctor Who, but the first episode starring Karen Gillan, who is cast member of the Guardians of the Galaxy, but she's Amy Pond over a couple of the series, as they call them, over across the ocean, across the pond, across the Amy Pond. She was announced for a convention coming up in August, and she's in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. And last night I spent several hours YouTubing basically every single interview, talk show, red carpet, whatever that she's ever been on, and watched it all. And I never wanted to watch Doctor Who only because I didn't want to have yet another fandom
exactly
that I would love. I'd have to buy the DVDs and start buying the t-shirts and the action figures.
Lots and lots of merchandise for that.
Yeah, and that's why I tried to avoid it. And but now I want to, like, after watching her, I had first, I had shown you the picture of her shaving her head for the Guardians movie, and that was my first time that I've ever seen her. I've heard the Amy Pond character and seen people cosplay as her, but I've never seen her actual self. And then, I was watching the Guardians panel, and then the clip that she took off what I assumed was her hair, and it was a wig, and that's when I, like, instantly fell in love with who this person was, and now the fact that she's going to be in Chicago. And so now I'm going to do my homework, watch all of her stuff, hopefully try to contain myself, and know that obviously once I start watching those, I'm going to be like, all right, now I got to watch the beginning ones. But thankfully to Hulu, my Hulu Plus membership, all of the episodes are actually on there that I pay for. So as long as they stay on there, then maybe that'll help curb my need to purchase.
I've seen a couple, episodes when they were on, but have not really followed it faithfully.
Yeah.
There's too much other stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just one of those. It's something that I know I'd absolutely like. Well, here, just to show how much she means to me, she's, of course, my my screensaver wallpaper on my phone there. So anything else to say about the knitting hobby and anything like that to add to it? Now you strictly do things like, you do it as for a hobby and as gifts and things like that, but you don't necessarily go to the extra length of being like, oh, you can purchase this here. You've never opened yourself up to that.
I've done a few things for people. It's hard to do it because I like to knit socks, for example. And yeah, you can buy 12 pairs of socks for, you know, $15 at Walmart.
Yeah.
And you can buy a cheap skein of sock yarn for $15. Why would you pay $15 for a pair of socks? Then you still got to make it.
Or it could be,
because it fits and because it's warm and because I can.
Or it could be the Flintstones or the Rubbles and you don't wear socks at all. That would be a hard market
to
sell it.
That would be. And it's just the time just...
Yeah.
It's not justified.
And the TV show, Justified? You're too busy watching the TV show Justified to justify yourself to make socks. Editor's note, neither of us watch Justified.
No.
Yeah. And could part of that be, and I'll find a way to segue that back to me, because it is the Anton podcast, that if you also start taking orders for things, or like had like a little page, like, does that for you almost like take the fun out of it, where it's like it would almost get too overwhelming and like that kind of defeats the purpose of
it, takes
like
the joy out of it.
Is it relaxing? What do you? I might not even know this. What do you do when you knit? Are you listening or watching things?
Listening to audiobooks or podcasts, watching movies, watching TV shows.
And that could be something that can be very like. Like, let's say I'm doing my hobby of reading comic books. I'm not going to be watching movies and reading comic books or listening to music. But, yeah, knitting is definitely a perfect thing to, very universal.
I mean, it's something, you can have something on in the background and be paying attention to it. You obviously have to pay attention to what you're doing.
But yeah,
I usually have the iPad next to me with the pattern on it so that I can be glancing back and forth. And
but you can definitely balance the entertainment-wise and not get out of the creative zone of...
And it's something you can do traveling, like a couple months ago.
Not while driving, though.
If you're the passenger, yes. But a couple months ago, I took a trip to Florida. I flew down, and I was working on a pair of socks. The pattern name was called Snakes on a Sock, so I made Snakes on a Sock on a Plane.
Oh, that is brilliant.
Yes. And it was good that I had my knitting along, because I, on my way back, my plane got delayed. I had a four-hour layover at the airport, so I was working on Snakes on a Sock in an airport.
If you had enough yarn with you, maybe if the airline would have liked it, you could have made kind of like what they have, car covers, you know, like fancy cars and stuff. You could have made it like a little airplane cozy to go over the top of the plane when it's sitting there docked and not being used. But go back to saying where you can knit, like, while traveling stuff. We kidded around on here, but we had to make sure that we're 100% serious on the Anton podcast that we do not promote knitting while
driving.
Please
don't knit when you drive.
Exactly. This is a PSA announcement.
It's not against the law yet, but it probably will be.
Friends don't let friends
knit and drive. Or knit drunk.
Yes. Because you could stab yourself.
Or you could mess things up big time.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you get a... You're making, let's say if you make a sweater for someone and you have one...
four arms.
Yeah. And then you have to... Unless you are super drunk and you make a sweater with eight arms, then you have to
find an octopus that it fits.
Yeah.
Just because you find an octopus, it might not fit.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole extra task you don't want to put on yourself.
Right.
And with you saying that about the, you know, obviously time-wise, but also, you know, you do it for fun. So many people ask me about, like, oh, you never went to school for filmmaking, and, like, why didn't you take classes, or why don't you go do this? And I'm like, well, I want to do it for fun. I'm like, the second it stops being fun is when I don't want to do it anymore.
Right.
And I started feeling that in the summer of, it wasn't 69. don't believe the song. Summer of 2013, oh, my God, it was 13 or 12.
13 was this last summer.
Okay, yeah, that's what I'm trying to play. It would be 12. Wow, that's summer.
Well, almost 2 years.
Yeah, summer of 2012 would have been when I released my last official short film, which was Summer in the Park with the Mexa Twins.
Okay.
And I made that one with, that was the second time I have met them in person, been friends with them for like a year at that point, but second time we've ever met, and they're good at English, but here I am. In the middle of, like, downtown Chicago in a nice park, and it's very populated, tourists everywhere, and I'm trying to make a silent movie, but I have to direct these two foreigners and who have never, like, been directed and acted on a screen or anything, and my process, I go pretty fast because I know what I want, and I don't necessarily take the time to let those people know. I always just say, I'm like, just do what I say and it'll all make sense. Like, people have acted in my things and are completely clueless what's happening. Some people act without the person there. I think you've probably done that a couple times.
Yep.
Or you've probably had scenes with people you've never met before.
Mm-hmm.
And some things are filmed out of order and people are just so confused. They're like, how is that even? I'm like, just trust me. Just say the lines. I'll say, you know, I know when it's good. And then I blend it all together. And that's kind of like how they're, like, the whole movie itself is me being confused on which girl is which.
Right.
Which is perfect because I was actually confused when directing on which girl is which. I just kept having to say, I looked at both of them like, Daisy, and then one would have to raise their hand.
Okay.
Like, okay, Daisy, now you're over there. And so it was like, just like, it was like an Inception type of directing for that, but came out awesome. One of my favorite things, and it's one of my very few short films that I think is more, it's, you know, definitely funny and ridiculous, but it's probably one of the most accessible for, like, anybody to watch, where I got a lot of weird stuff in my show, so it's not like I could give this to, like, a 90-year-old lady and be like, oh, you're going to get all these, like, stupid, like, comic book references or these Buffy jokes and things like that. But the Summer in the Park movie was very standalone that anyone can pretty much enjoy.
Well, that one and my favorite, Toddlers in the Wild.
Oh, yes. I should have mentioned that other than Barton Heights. Toddler in the Wild, you have very talented granddaughters that have showed up throughout the Barton films verse when it's Toddlers in the Wild and Kind of Normal Activity 2. Mm-hmm. And I think they've appeared in the other random little things here and there.
And the Taylor movie.
The
Taylor movie that you did. All the little video clips of her.
Yes, that's right. All her...
Taylor movie.
Yeah, all of her music videos and her, like, catchphrases and all that stuff, yeah.
And then the promo for Strike Girl, too. They were both
That's right, that's right. And Taylor was the original, and unfortunately this never got used, but the Ninja Baby.
Ninja Baby, yep.
Which you had made...
I had made her bait ninja costume.
Yeah, that's right. She was, like, less than 6 months, probably. And she was, man, I wonder, oh my God. I got to go through and see if I can find this footage. And I've switched cameras, so maybe it's lost. Unfortunately, hopefully it's not, you know, it might be lost forever. And I don't know if you've ever seen it or even heard about this. It's weird.
No, I don't. I've got a couple of still shots.
Okay, well, this is something I don't think anyone other than me and Laura have seen. I think I showed one other person. Did you ever know that we filmed the scene where we see the ninja baby being birthed?
I kind of heard about it, but I didn't.
Okay.
No, I'm not going to show you because you'll have to wait till the movie.
Okay. And unfortunately, that movie never happened because I think it was for my feature-length version, my sequel, blah, blah, blah. But for those of you listening at home, I had a ninja movie and a ninja baby. And it was me and her daughter, Laura, with a less than 6 month... I think she was bigger then because we were laughing just about how huge she was. She was smaller when we did the Ninja Baby.
Right.
But by the time we had to film this, we filmed it way ahead of time before I was even done writing the movie because we wanted to get it done. And so she was larger, but she was still less than a year old. And so... To get this done and to keep it less awkward and for me to direct it and get the right camera angle that's in my brain, and it's hard to tell someone else. I did a lot of the camera work, so it's hard to tell someone else what's in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did a little role reversal, and we did it in what could be considered a dining room of my place here. And I am holding the camera. I'm propped up with my legs up. With a blanket over, so you can definitely see, you know, there's basically a first-person view of a lady giving birth. Laura donned my ER TV show Scrubs, which, by the way, ER is a show that we also loved together prior to, like, all this other geeky stuff. She's got some of the plastic gloves on, all that kind of stuff, and she's holding baby Taylor basically... In my crotch region, Taylor, she was, then there's no baby neglect here, but she was waiting a little longer to feed her so we could try to get some tears and, like, get some crankiness in there. So
get some birthing sounds.
Yes, I could easily add that in post.
So you didn't have to slap her to make her cry.
Yeah. But thankfully, with just waiting slightly longer, and the girls is... You know, much older and very healthy, and should let the editors know forever. Yeah, and we had to do it a couple times to get it right, and also because we were laughing at how inappropriate it just was, and basically, yeah. So Laura was the doctor delivering the baby that came out in a ninja costume, and she was crying and she was cranky, and we were laughing. It was so hilarious, and. And it was perfect because I was getting the exact view and the right pans that I needed and stuff. And I think a couple people have seen it. I think I showed it to Laura, but I did one of those where I slowed down the audio of the video and I added some coloring effects, and it sounded like an elephant in pain. And it was slowly coming out, and I changed the picture so you didn't know really what was happening. I made it a little darker, and it just looked like some demon spawn elephant murder of some sort. And it was like, it was crazy because it was just the slowed down version of a baby wanting to be fed that afternoon. But And I'd have to do a lot of digging, but if I had the resources of all my external hard drives like I do now, it's a whole different world when I started filmmaking to what it is now. But that might be something they just have to recreate just for the fun of it or something. But now, why did I start talking about all of that?
You're talking about when filmmaking stopped being fun.
Oh, yeah, because of the knitting and everything. Wow, we really got on a crazy tangent there. That was really fun. But anyways, the Summer in the Park movie is extremely fun, and then it's just been getting harder to get people in the movies. Everyone's, you know, graduates are going off to colleges, so my Barton Heights crew weren't as easy as accessible as I wanted. And then, even though I didn't have the people for it, I wrote a couple things that I was just having trouble writing, a couple ideas that just never came off of a one sentence pitch, and then it just got to the point where I'm like, I just didn't have that ambition, or I'm like, it just wasn't that fun. But at that same time is when the podcasting started, mm-hmm. which are going to be celebrating an anniversary coming up here, and let's see here. I think that's all I was going to go on for off of the knitting thing, is the fact that my hobbies, I do them. That's why I didn't want to do filmmaking for a career, because I wanted it to be fun. I don't want to have it to be my job, and it started to feel like a job having to get all these people together and doing all this and that.
Just coordinating schedules.
Yeah. And the podcasting became, it's almost in the same way too, of trying to, like, especially with the AB conversation that we do every Sunday morning, and works great for our schedules, and we've done a couple here and there, but Anton, that's why I wanted to do the Anton podcast too, because I had so much more that I wanted to say outside of that hour and a half segmented show, and now we get to concentrate on that more here. And and then with Skype, I've been able to do a couple podcasts with internet friends and stuff, so mm-hmm. now basically I can just make a podcast whenever, and it's fun. And so that's where I'm in debt to you for several things. One thing, the Stan Lee autograph, for the idea behind it. Not you didn't contribute to paying for it, because it was very expensive, but I would say your part of the contribution was like half the battle. So that was one. The other one is props and all that stuff for Barton Heights and other short films and basically whatever we needed.
Cute grandkids for you to film.
Yeah, that made it very, very easy. Without them, a couple of my favorite films would not be online now.
I think I even showed you the lion cake, or the lamb cake.
Yeah, there was. That's right. Yeah, it's.
Hey, look, you can make this into a movie.
And that's all it takes is, if you haven't seen it, just to type Toddlers in the Wild. I would hope mine would be the first one to come up. But
hope so.
Otherwise, go to bartonheights.4t.com. I think I have it organized on there. Or just type Anthony Latch and Toddlers in the Wild, or go to my page and find it somewhere on there. But, yeah, that was definitely an extreme fun one to make. But, I'm in debt for... Definitely ideas there, the contributions you give to the AB conversation, whether it be food, whether it be emails, all that kind of stuff helps build our show and gives us a reason, especially as a listener, gives us a reason to keep doing it every week. If we didn't have people that commented and actually enjoyed and mentioned certain things that are funny and just, you know, overall just love the episodes, you know, some of the excitement would probably slowly start to dwindle, and the reason for having it wouldn't exist as much. So we're definitely, I will speak on the behalf of Brent, that we are very thankful for you as a listener.
You're welcome.
And we'll have to work out something to have you on the official AB conversation, which doing the podcast episodes where we, hello. I thought that was very awkward for you to whistle at that point, but it was just your cellular smartphone device. I think what would be a great thing, and it proved successful at the Pizza Ranch, like getting people together and just plopping the computer down and just recording, and that doesn't have to be on a Sunday morning thing. It just kind of,
right.
It added like a podcast thing, it added a lot of fun and just whatever. I think we have to, like,
Pizza Ranch.
Yeah. So I think we have to, like, try to do something where we can, like, see if we can get, like you and Erica are definitely are, like, our two our biggest supporters and stuff, and, like, just try to get some podcast together and have it at the Pizza Ranch or something and
cool.
Get you officially on that show. But I'm glad that you showed a lot of interest being on this show. I didn't really push and be like, oh, we got to get a date, you got to get a date. And then you're the one saying, hey, I got these days off, you know, any of these work? I'm like, hey, perfect. And probably didn't take much. I didn't really write notes other than the listing things that we liked.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Here we are, talked for an hour and 20 minutes about things. And
it's been that long already?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's usually how it is, like, with the AB conversation. When it gets to, like the hour and 40 mark, you know, hour and 40 minute mark, we, you know, we're just like, okay, we got to start wrapping this up, you know, because, yeah, and the beauty of podcasts, you can listen to at your leisure, and you can
right.
You can break it out, you know, listen to 10 minutes a day or
well,
something.
In the summertime, I'll listen to it a lot when I'm out cutting grass.
Yeah.
And I swear people think I'm crazy because I'll have to stop the lawnmower because I'm laughing so hard. I don't want to run into something.
Yeah, that's good too. And I always think of that too because I subscribe to, I think, 30 podcasts, a bunch of comedians and comic book ones, so many different ones. Basically, I'm always having something to listen to, and I'm doing when I'm walking to work every single day, and, like, I haven't eaten a meal at home and watched a movie at the same time in a long time, because if I'm doing it, I'm just sitting there in silence eating and listening to podcasts. But I always think about that, too, when I'm walking, like, walking on the, you know, side of Highway 45 there, and I'm sitting there just, like, laughing or, like, before we open at work and stuff, and
just
like
bust out laughing randomly.
Yeah, like no one else. It's silent at that time in the morning, and I'm sitting there, like rotating milk, and I'm sitting there just laughing my ass off about something. And but yeah, that is got to be pretty funny too. You're out there just mowing the lawn, and I do it when I bike ride too. I'm listening, so like. Anytime, I look so damn happy out there when I'm bike riding.
The guy really loves riding his bike.
Yeah, just be like, well, little do they know is that I'm just really like listening to comedians, and I'm just having to find something else to do while doing that rather than just sit there and.
Because if you'd be listening to music, you'd be singing, and then
people
would be laughing at you.
Exactly. And I can't read comic books when I'm biking. I can listen to audiobooks. It's close, but.
You can't look at pictures.
Yeah, exactly. And
comic books just isn't the same without pictures.
Exactly. And comic book wouldn't exist without pictures. It would be a book.
It would be.
But yeah, so let me think how we got off on that tangent. Yeah, I think it's slowly starting to wrap up things. Do you have any kind of final thoughts on the whole thing at all?
No, I'm just looking around here. There's lots of movies that I have. There's books that I have. It's kind of strange.
Yeah, you can very much relate to the decor that I have. And I had mentioned, one of the coolest grandmas you'll ever come to know. You're not my grandma.
No.
I'm just saying, just a grandma. And I know, giving you that one compliment from one of my friends that found out she was so blown away when she found out that you were a grandma.
Oh, okay.
And then when I mentioned, like, how many kids at that time, and she was just like, what? And, like, and like her having known, like, you know, with you being in the show and just, like, the things that you like and everything, it's always that extra thing to relate to. Like, for instance, if I looked at my grandmas while they were alive, there was nothing that I really talked to them about. Like, I think that goes for a lot of grandmas of this day and age too, are a lot more, obviously, I think that just comes with like social media and all that kind of stuff helps. But
well, and the fact that I was a grandma at 37.
Yeah, well,
helps.
that helps
some people are first having kids.
That helps too.
Yeah.
Not just because of that, but let's say Aunt Sue would also be like classified. I mean, I can go down the line, blah blah blah. But like, you know, the things that I can say to you and relate to you, like I see you at work, I'm rushing to like tell you about like, oh my God, this thing happened in the Whedon world, or this thing, you got to read this, or like, or you're telling me something about this. And a lot of times you are breaking news to me yes. that I didn't know. And
that's
like,
exciting when that happens.
Yeah. And it is rare, but it's great. And so that's what's cool is like certain things that we can connect on that level, and like going to like, you know, obviously the movies and stuff
right.
like that, getting into
See
the
Thor.
Marvel, yeah, getting into the Marvel movies and all that kind of stuff. So that's something that pretty much always exists. There's probably going to be no reason for us not to relate to
right.
something
right.
awesome. There's always going to be new
There's
geeky
things.
There's
always going to be awesome stuff.
Yeah, and then as new awesome stuff comes, the old awesome stuff just keeps staying awesome.
Yes.
Other
someday in the future when I do marry Nathan Fillion, you will be invited to the wedding.
That is very kind. Very kind. I'm glad that I would
and then
be
I'll be in the picture with him.
And I'll try to photobomb it
okay.
just to try to steal your precious moment there, but I'm glad that we have something to look forward to, because
yes.
that'll make a great podcast, because then
that would be awesome.
We can bring Nathan on.
There.
I was looking for ever since I started this one, I've been
for a
wondering
to get him on the podcast.
Yeah, I needed a reason, and now I got my loophole. So
there we go.
All right, so yeah, I think any other final thoughts, or we're good?
No, just it's always been fun listening, and hope that it keeps on being fun to listen to.
Good, and I think it will, as long as there's stuff in television and movies and comic books and food and video games and all that stuff coming out.
We didn't even really talk much about comic books. I'm your little My Little Pony's friend
oh.
with comic books.
That's right. With you listening to the AB Conversation, you would listen to, you know, things that you necessarily don't follow, and then that got you to get interested because of my advertising, My Little Ponies and Rat Queens
right,
and things
right.
like that. But
and Serenity comic.
Yep. But I think that would definitely be a perfect reason for you to come back for another episode in the future, because we are 4 minutes from an hour and a half mark, and I think that's good. We'll see if I break it up just for the sake of just, you know, having episodes kind of. It's nice to have some episodes in back order,
yeah,
you know, just
have
to.
Banked.
Yeah, bank. That's the word I'm looking for. Is bank a couple episodes here and there, but. So, yep, thank you.
You're welcome.
And I'll take that to the bank.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I guess that is it. Thank you for being a guest here on the Anton Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And how I end every podcast, and I'm saying this so I remember how I say it. Now I remember. Because sometimes, I think there's one episode where I'm just like, I'm Anthony, and then I'm waiting. I'm like, wait, Brent's not here. This has been a conversation. Wait, no, nope, okay, and then I remember. I think one time I had to stop and I deleted
so
it or something.
You need to have, instead of sarcasm, you need to say Anton.
Yes. So my ending, official ending for the Anton Podcast is that, and I forgot it as I'm watching Serenity in the background. I need to not look.
We'll see you between the panels.
It's recording, so right now I'm talking, so just say some stuff.
Some stuff.
Some stuff works. And then say another thing.
Another thing.